Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Dr. Tom Russo joining us live, Chief of Infectious Diseases with the Jacobs School of Medicine. It's the most talked about subject in America right now, the reopening of schools. And doctor, if you look around the country, there's reason to be concerned. In Cherokee, Georgia right now, Cherokee County, 900 students are in quarantine 1 week after their schools opened. But here in New York State, we continue to have the lowest numbers of the pandemic. Do you think enough safeguards are in place to allow in-person classes?
Well, of course, Susan, we're talking about where you're going to go ahead and do that. And I think Georgia was an example where, unfortunately, they didn't have the first critical component in place, a low level of community spread. Our schools are connected with the community. So if there's a high level of community spread and you open schools at the same time, there's no question that you're going to get a bunch of new cases within the school setting. Fortunately, here in Western New York, we have an extraordinarily low level of community spread, at least at this time. So I think we meet that first critical criteria to be able to consider safely opening our schools.
The discussion around children and the virus really needs to happen, right? Because there's so many misconceptions, among them that children are immune. They've never been immune. They just might not show it the way others do.
Yeah, Brian, that's exactly correct. I think there's certain, you know, individuals and circles that had this wishful thinking that children were immune, children could not transmit this new coronavirus infection. And we've talked about it before on this show, that we've known for a long time that obviously children can get infected and they can transmit the disease. There's been some question of the children under 10 years old, if they do that quite as efficiently as older children and adults. But nonetheless, I think the take-home message is that in general, in preparation from school, that you have to assume that children could get infected, transmit the disease, and then put the proper public health measures in place so that everyone could be protected as best as possible to minimize risk with that understanding.
So, you know, people see these reports. The American Academy of Pediatrics came out with that report to almost 100,000 kids testing positive in the last 2 weeks of July. That would be a, you know, 40% increase of the normal rate. It sounds alarming, but do you think that's just kind of representing what's been happening all along?
Yes, absolutely. They just started looking. The reason that we were not, and this sort of wishful thinking developed, is because children, for the most part, are asymptomatic or minimally symptomatic, so they weren't being tested. They were flying under the radar. And now that people started looking, we're, of course, identifying these cases. So this, quote, increase of risk, I think, is sort of a testing abnormality where if you look, you will find it.
You know, it seems that the medical community has learned so much about COVID since March, you know, in treating this. I mean, someone who gets it now, as opposed to someone who got it in March or April, someone today has a much better chance, right?
Yes, absolutely, Susan. And, you know, we've sort of, that point has sort of gotten diluted and lost over the months because there's been so much to talk about. But in the beginning of this, we emphasized the importance to stay safe, because we want to buy time for better treatments. We want to buy time for the vaccine, which will obviously save lives. So now where we're at in August, we have at least two treatments that can ameliorate more severe disease. The vaccine is not here yet, but there's hope it'll be coming in the near future. And our level of supportive care and intensive care units for the most critically ill is much better now. Doctors understand the management of ventilators and some nuances of this disease and some of the clotting events. So absolutely, you want to sort of stay safe as long as possible, hopefully get to that vaccine. But if you do get sick now, you're better off now than you were back in March and April.
So these low hospitalization numbers in the region that we're seeing, how much of that is due to there being less virus versus knowing how to treat the virus a lot better?
The low numbers of hospitalization right now is probably minimally impacted by improved treatment of the virus. I think it's primarily due to the fact that in Western New York, we're doing a great job with public health measures. I think the other aspect of this is, and we just heard the weather report, right? Great run of lovely weather. So we're doing a lot of stuff outdoors. And obviously, when you do outdoor activities, the risk of contracting this virus is significantly less than indoor activities. So I think it's really fewer cases, public health measures, and people that are getting infected tend to be, as we've talked about, younger, and so they're less likely to be hospitalized. Those people that are at greatest risk that are vulnerable, they know it now. They're rigorous about using masks. They're rigorous about physical distancing. They're really rigorous about putting themselves in a situation where they could be at risk. So I think it's the combination of those things that have kept our hospitalizations down to a very, very low level.
I want to ask you, too, about recent decisions by college football, the Big Ten, the Pac-12, decisions to postpone their seasons. And there's a couple of others that are thinking about it right now. Do you think that is the best move, or do you think those seasons could have happened?
No, I think it is the best move. You know, football is really a unique sport of the contact sports where these young athletes are going to be in close contact for prolonged periods of time without masks, which we know is a formula for contracting this virus. And though most of them that if they got infected would do well, the concern is, of course, a ripple effect where then you get a significant number of cases that will spread throughout the campus and then to staff and faculty and to parents and loved ones, et cetera. So at least from a medical point of view, it makes sense to me to postpone the season. Let's be optimistic and hope we could get the vaccine on board where then we could get everyone vaccinated and protected and so they could feel comfortable that they could safely participate in the sport. I am supportive of them holding off in football at this point.
We talked a little bit about treatments and a vaccine still a little ways off. I might have asked you this before, but we hear a lot about antibody treatments. How likely is it that antibody drugs can be developed on kind of a wide scale that would really help people who have the virus?
I think there's a high likelihood of that, Brian. A number of these monoclonal antibodies, think of them as like high test, right? High concentration of antibodies that are specifically directed at the virus to prevent it from infecting cells, as opposed to harvesting the plasma or the blood from individuals that have been infected. You get a potpourri of all sorts of different antibodies. Some of them work, some of them don't, higher titers, lower titers. And they're in trials right now. They look really great in some preclinical studies. Of course, we're going to have to wait and see if the clinical data shows efficacy. But I'm quite optimistic, and then hopefully they're going to be available sometime maybe in the late fall, and they could be produced fairly quickly at high levels. We use these types of antibodies in the treatment of a number of cancers and a number of inflammatory and autoimmune diseases, and so companies know how to make these in large quantities. So I'm hopeful this is going to be one of our next important treatment breakthroughs.
Dr. Russo, we always appreciate your insight. Dr. Tom Russo, Chief of Infectious Diseases at the Jacobs School of Medicine.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today. Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.